Okay, good morning, everybody. This morning, our sponsors are Avram and Sharon Blumenthal, sponsoring in memory of Avram's grandfather, Chaim ben Avram Yitzchak, Alav Shalom, and Jerry Chani Zatz, in memory of Jerry's mother, Masha bat Harav Avram Shlomo, Alav Shalom, and Neshamat Havaliot. Our learning will be in their memory, and may their memory continue to be a blessing. We begin a new perek today, and we can begin hopeful because we've got one Amud to do. We're going to do 7b, Zayin Amud Bet, basically starting on the bottom of Zayin Amud Aleph with the Mishnah. But I thought it might be helpful to give some background of where we're headed and why we're now talking about this. The topic of this second perek, the first was Edom Zomamim, and the second is going to be Galus, or exile. So there are a couple of technical introductory concepts that I think will be helpful. When is exile put into place? Where is the place of exile? What are the consequences if you decide not to go? And outlining those will come in a moment. But the first question is, why are we talking about exile? Firstly, this Masechet is Makot. We said from the start, you'd expect it to begin with a discussion of what lashes are, when you get them. And we had an almost random association for the first chapter, which is, if you try to be Edom Zomamim, and it's a particular case, you don't get what you intended, but you get Makot. So that kind of was how we started there. And we suggested that in many ways, this Masechet is a treatise on political philosophy, what it means to adjudicate truth, what it means to dispense justice. And if we were to condense the whole first chapter with all its complications and flying camels, that is the thing that sticks out, what was the basic theme that we can glean is that on earth, justice is approximate. That doesn't mean we throw out the truth and we don't even bother and we just kind of guess and try to maintain a system, but we recognize there will be mistakes. People will be put to death who don't deserve it. People will be hit who don't deserve it, or at least don't appear to deserve it for what they've done on earth, according to, you know, factual historical record. But that's the way it goes. What's the phrase in American court? In order to convict somebody of a crime, you need to prove to beyond reasonable doubt. Right. So meaning, in American court, you don't need to prove 100% certainty. There's always potential room, maybe they didn't do it. I mean, to some degree, when you say reasonable doubt, most jurors, how many of you done jury duty? A few of you? Have you avoided jury duty? There you go. I made sure they don't have my address. I've no idea if they'll ever catch me. Say again?
You have a driver's license?
Oh, they have my address then. There you go. So, usually we imagine I need to be convinced 100% that this is the case because I'm aiming for truth. But even within the code, reasonable doubt is the claim. You can still think it may not have been them and you give them the punishment. And that was how the last perek finished. It finished after all this debate with a quote that is taken out of its context often to say, this is what Jewish philosophy is, with Rabbi Akiva saying, I never would have allowed a death to take place. But actually, the end of the perek dismisses that and says, Rabbi Akiva, I understand your impulse to say that, but if you were to do that, injustice would be rife. There would be no disincentive to crime. People would go around killing each other, or people would be so angry that the justice system wasn't working, they would take justice into their own hands. And the last sentence, as we noted, is an odd ending. Rabbi Akiva says, oh, and no one would be put to death for murder, but no one would be put to death for anything. And we said, well, what about adultery, for example? How could you get them off the hook? And he said, well, could they 100% testify? They know 100% that there was an act of sexual impropriety. Maybe they were just lying, you know, in a bed together. You don't know what happened exactly. And at that point, the witnesses would probably have to turn around and say, come on, we all know what was happening. And Rabbi Akiva would say, no, that's not how justice works. That's not how we adjudicate truth. We all know, people say, I need facts. And the Gemara responds and says, actually, the rabbis are comfortable with, we all know what was happening, and we'll put people to death on that. The last, bless you, the last is, b'manafim, shirimanafim. The last three words are, if you see people behaving in a way that is beyond a reasonable doubt, worthy of capital punishment, we give it to them. So this is, I guess, where we pick up into the next perek, where we start talking about exile. And for a number of the commentaries, the only reason that we can find why we're now talking about Golos is because it's mentioned in the first Mishnah of the first Perek, where it says, the cases of Edom Zomim, you don't give what they intended. One of them is when they said, you deserve to go into exile, and then they were found to be schemers. We say, oh, you've got to go to exile. And the Gemara says, no. Exile is specific to somebody who attempted, or somebody who ended up killing someone, so you can't go to exile. So people say, oh, well, it came up in the first Mishnah, so now we're going to dedicate a Perek to it. But it seems to me we can make an argument for a more pertinent reason in terms of the political philosophy we're outlining. After the first Perek, what conclusion might a reasonable person reach about living with other people? If we've just said, you can be put to death, even though we know it may not be true, even though it may be that it wasn't you, but we've got to assemble evidence and we're trying to make society work and we're doing the best we can and it's approximate, so there's a risk to living in society. So what might a reasonable person think is the best way to live? Yeah, the first impulse I might think is, you know, stuff everybody else. Why would I put me and my family at risk of being put to death by a system that knows and confesses? It's just beyond a reasonable doubt. I want to live by truth. I'm going to go and live in a cave somewhere. And I'm never going to get accused of anything falsely. And I'm never going to accuse anything false on anybody else. That might be the impulse. So what actually this Perek is coming in many ways to address is two points. Number one, the benefit of living with other people. We may think, go and live in a cave. And if we think about living in a cave, I imagine that story of Shimon Gamliel, who went to live in a cave for 12 years and then came out, comes to mind. But in many ways, this whole Perek is a description of why we need other people. I think people always quote Aristotle saying we're social animals. And that comes to the fore in this case. Why exile is even a punishment? Why should exile be a punishment? So send me wherever you want. I'll go and live on my own. I'll get on with it. And there's a sense that being rooted in a place is key. And we will come to a description of what's required in exile, because there is a word that says they have to go to the Ir Miklat, the city of refuge, v'chai, and live. So there is a daf that considers, well, what do we need for life? And one of the considerations is going to be, if the population is depleted, we actually have an influx of people so that you have neighbors in the Ir Miklat, because that's part of what it means to live a full human life. So we're going to discuss why we need other people. But at the same time, we're going to try to ameliorate the risk of false accusation. And this is going to make, when I, in Chicago, I lived in a rented apartment, and then I moved into a condo. And in a condo, how many of you ever lived in a condo? Nobody? Oh, so I'll tell you, one of the things they said to me when we were wanting to move in, said, you've got to get used to condo living. And I was like, okay. And they said, so for example, you want to put it like a welcome mat outside your door? No can do. The rules of the condo board are you can't put a mat out unless you consult with the board. And everyone, oh gosh, it's just putting a welcome mat. But when you're living in a public space, you have to go by the rules of the public space. So what we're going to determine is, what is societal living? What do I have to bear in mind? How do I ameliorate risk of false accusation? And it's going to be an intense amount of social awareness, which is why we're now going to talk about what it means to be unintentional or inadvertent or accidental. We're going to adjudicate how much focus do you have to have on what you're doing so that you don't end up getting sent away to say that you're a responsible member of society. Usually we imagine in American law, to be put in jail, you have to kill intentionally. There is rules of manslaughter. I don't know how you define manslaughter here, and I assume it applies if you kill a woman too. But can you get jailed for manslaughter? Right, so you have to determine whether it's recklessness, negligence, gross negligence, all these varieties, and we're going to talk about that. So let's key into this. The three pieces of background information that I think will help fall things into place. Number one, if you are at a scene and somebody dies because of you, accidental, on purpose, unintentional, whatever, if something happened where someone was alive and then they're not because of you, you are now at risk. Because the surviving family members of the person who just died seem to be legally permitted to kill you as a vengeance. They are, what are they called? They're called the Goel Hadam, the Redeemer of the Blood, which is astonishing because we've not proven anything yet. So we've got no idea if legally you are responsible for this. But there is a biblical permission for them, it seems, to kill the ostensible, alleged killer whether it was on purpose or not. Even if it was an accident, they have permission to kill you. So you are permitted to protect yourself by fleeing to the city of refuge. And this is before any court case has happened. Somebody dies, you're at the scene, the first thing you want to do, run. You want to go to the Ir Miklat so nobody can kill you, because there's a recognition, it seems, that if somebody's at the scene and they see a family member of theirs has died, not through natural causes, and there's a human being at fault, there's going to be rage, there's going to be a need for vengeance. You need to run, we'll protect you, but there is permission granted for them to kill you. And there's actually debate will come to whether it's permission or an obligation for them to kill you. Could be, you know, I really don't want to hurt you.
Okay.
What's hit and run?
Yeah, hit and run.
No, meaning you run and we will adjudicate your case. Okay. But it's like you being put under pre-bail arrest or whatever it is when they're adjudicating a case, you're put away. Meaning so you're not just out there, otherwise people could take law into their own hands. How you keep track of people is a good question. But the assumption is you can protect yourself by running to Ir Miklat until the case is adjudicated. Then... So there are details about what Ir Miklat is. How many cities of refuge were there?
Six
biblical ones, 42 extra ones, because you could use the Levite cities. The Pasuk only describes six and then speaks about the cities of Leviim, and there are distinctions between those two in terms of how they function, which we'll get to over the next six duff. But that's basically, there's going to be a lot of talk about how do the borders work? I mean, again, these are hypothetical questions. What happens if you're at the edge of the city of refuge and you kind of hang your head out the side and there's a Gol Adam waiting there and they take you out and shoot you while you're half hanging in? Do they have to be now charged with murder because you were in the city of refuge or are you out? So how do you adjudicate being in it? What happens if you're sitting in a treehouse where the roots of the tree are in Ir Miklat but the branches are outside? And there's going to be all discussions, technical questions. We'll get to why those might be pertinent. Politically or philosophically, the length of the sentence you're in there for is going to be until the Kohen Gadol dies. There's some all sorts of questions. What happens if they're in between Kohen Gadols when you go in? What happens if you're the Kohen Gadol and you kill by mistake? Yeah, it turns out you never get out. And we'll talk about why that's an appropriate way to decide the end of your sentence as opposed to a 10-year sentence, which is also arbitrary in American law. You know, 10 years... maybe 10 years is way over the top for this person. Not in, it's a way to adjudicate. So why the Kohen Gadol in particular? And all of this is going to fit into the mold for our purposes, or I will force it into the mold for our purposes, of having deep social awareness if you're going to live with other people. We need to be with other people, but we also need to be deeply attuned to potential accidents. I mean, last night, I blew out my Havdalah candle, and as I blew it, I heard my wife next to me say, "Ow, why'd you do that?" And it turns out hot wax flew out and landed on her arm. And we'll talk about what happens if I throw something and it hits something and it knocks someone. Is that negligence, gross negligence, accidental? And there'll be debate suggesting if you did something like that and ended up killing someone, you're out. You've got to go flee, which is suggesting a massive threshold of social awareness where you can barely move without thinking, is this potentially going to have unintended consequences? So we've got to find a way to rein in so that I've got freedom to move, but also recognize that I've got to have some sense. So we've spoken about Ir Miklat, we spoke about Gol Hadam, we spoke about the kind of premise of this perek, which is we need to be together. How do we live in a way that keeps us aware of other people's safety so that we don't get falsely accused? And now we're going to talk about intent. In Jewish law, there are four levels of intent. What are the obvious levels of intent that you would guess? Those are the obvious ones?
Intentional.
Right, intentional and unintentional would be the first ones I would guess. And then you've got the gray areas in the middle. So intentional, which we call mazid, that straightforwardly, you kill someone by mazid, straightforward punishment. You break Shabbos by mazid, straightforward punishment. Unintentional, we call ones, which is it's completely not my fault. I had this discussion with my daughter last night, not because I was doing Marcos with her, but because she was trying to take a wipe out of a box and there was like a stack of things on top of it. I said, "Please take those off the top. It's all going to fall." And she said, "No, it's fine, it's fine." She kept pressing it and then it all fell. And I had a very calm, gentle go at her She said, but it was an accident. I said, no, it wasn't an accident. It was unintentional. And there's a big difference between accident and unintentional. And she didn't know what I was talking about. But I could see that she was trying to process. And I said, accident would be you had no idea it was going to happen. But I stood here telling you it was going to happen. And I know you didn't want it to happen, but you knew it might. And you should have. And Miriam said, give her a break. So that was the end of that. So accidental is I had no idea it was going to happen. And it's not my fault. And in Jewish law, the surviving family members, and we're going to use the case of murder because it's the most evocative and in some ways the most clear. If you kill somebody entirely by accident, they have no recourse, the surviving family members, to do anything to you. And you're off the hook. You may live with all sorts of traumas, but you are not penalized for that if it's a complete accident. And we're going to define what is exactly an accident. So those are the two obvious, intentional and unintentional. And then we usually think there's one in the middle. There's actually three in the middle. We've got shogeg, which is a classic case of negligence. How do you define negligence? Ask my daughter. How do you define negligence? That's what we're going to get into today. But then there are either side of negligence, there are extremes. One is called karov lemezid, which is it's pretty close to intentional. So we're going to call that gross negligence. And then there's karov leonis, which is it wasn't in a complete accident, but it wasn't really negligence either. So these gray areas, and we're going to try to weave out what they are to get a sense of what's reasonable for us to expect of other citizens in society, the way we live. That some people love throwing things. So let's say they're in their backyard and they're just tossing things at the fence. And then somebody walks into your yard and it hits them and they die. I mean, you were standing there throwing things. You can't say it was an accident, but is that shogeg? Do I have to have that kind of awareness in my own backyard? What happens if I stand in front of my house where it's a public walkway and I'm just throwing things? And same case, someone just walks into it. The situation of vacuum is exactly the same. I'm just standing there throwing things. No one was there and they jumped in the way. Is the fact that I'm in public mean I have to be more attentive than I'm in my backyard? There are going to be questions that we're going to weave out along that. Now, we'll get to the pictures at some point. That'll only take about 3 seconds, hopefully, because it would have taken longer if we didn't have the pictures. I did give you the psukim. We won't read them all, but hopefully this is a helpful context. And actually, we're not going to read any of them on the sheet. We'll read them as we go through the Gemara. But there are two contexts that we're going to be citing from. And essentially, the next daf is a... do you need one?
Oh, here's the picture.
Okay. So there are two contexts where the Torah talks about Ir Miklat, City of Refuge. One is in Bamidbar Lamed Hei, which is Bechukotai. Now, why might it be talking about Bechukotai? Maaseh. Why in Parashat Maaseh would it be talking about Ir Miklat? What does Maaseh, where is it contextually in terms of the Torah?
Going into Israel.
It's the end of Bamidbar. It's the very last parasha. Basically, prepare for condo living. Prepare for living in a society. Let's talk about Ir Miklat. The other context is in Parashat Shoftim, which is where all the issues of Adam Zomerman came up. So we're now blending or shifting from questions of justice in the abstract to questions of how do we live together with other people to Parashat Maaseh. And these verses on their own seem straightforward. For example, have a look at some of them. Verse 14 in Bamidbar, three cities you'll set aside in Israel, three on the other side of the Jordan. It's going to apply to any case. End of verse 15, the word, Kol maka nefesh bishkaga, whoever kills negligently. And that word bishkaga is repeated again. So there's going to be a question why it's repeated. The next three verses, it describes what is actual murder. If you hit somebody with iron on purpose, that's murder. If you have a stone in your hand that would cause death, it's murder. Verse 19, go'al adam hu yamit haratzeach. And actually, who kills the murderer? It's not a court executioner. It's the family, which again, we noted at some point a couple of weeks ago. That's pretty high stakes. If somebody kill the family member of yours, you're the one who has to put them to death. That's not easy. There is a possible of you putting a shaliach in place for you, but that seems to be the system. But if you skip down all the way to verse 22, it starts saying, but in befeta, if you bumped into below Eva without malice, hadafu, and you pushed them, or hishlech below tziyah, you threw something without forethought, obachol evan hashem, and in the next line, v'yapel alav, and you throw a stone and it fell on them, lo ayev lo v'lom v'kesh ra'ato, you're not a friend and you're not their enemy, v'shavtu edab ben makeh, you have to start deciding, was that intentional, turn over the page, and That's talk about a case where you have to flee to the city of Miklat, v'yashav ban, you live there, end of the verse, admut kohen gadol, until the kohen gadol dies. Next sentence, v'im yatzar otzer otzechet gvul, if you leave the city of refuge, matzel togol adam, and then the redeemer of blood finds you, they can kill you without a problem. Ki be'ir miklato yeshiv admut kohen gadol, you have to stay there until the kohen gadol dies. And then that's all from Maaseh. In Devarim, we've got a description of similar things. If you go down to verse 4, Zedavaharot Seach, this is the matter of the bless you, of the murderer, Sheyanushama, who flees at Vachai and lives. And that one word, Vachai, is going to be the subject of discussion for a number of pages. What does it mean for a person to live? And again, in Ir Mikla, and in many ways, we could see this as a model for prison systems. What do you need to give prisoners to ensure that they have quality of life? And there's going to be a description of making sure there's a marketplace, that there are water resources, that there's a library, that there's educational opportunities. I think we've mentioned in the past there is an obligation on teachers to flee with their students. If someone gets, you know, I've got, you know, quite a lot of students at YU. If one of them does something horrible, I have to get exiled and go with them. And the Gemara then reflects on the possibility of teachers being very prudent about who they decide to teach, knowing that they may end up get dragged off after them. Which is also about social awareness, that education is not just transactional, but recognize that you have to be aware of how you're transmitting and who you're transmitting to and how it gets handed on. So we'll come to that as well. And then the classic case in verse 5 is going to be part of our description today as well. Asher yavoet re'eu bayar. If you find a friend of yours in the forest, and again, this is being spoken, where is this being revealed to the Jewish people? In the Midbar. So the idea of a forest is already an odd locution to use. So there's got to be some reason it uses that. And that's why the Gemara will talk about legal consequences. Nidacholo begarzen, and you start chopping with an axe to chop down a tree. V'nashal habarzel min ha'etz, and then the iron flies off from the tree and hits somebody and they die. You have to flee as well. V'chai, and you have to live there. Okay, so those are psukim. The reason I put them there is because otherwise it'll seem very disjointed in the daf. Now, let us begin. Bottom of Zayin Amud Aleph. Elu hein hagolin. These are the people who are exiled. Which again, we come in thinking this is an odd way to begin a perek, but exile is a form of punishment because not being in your social context is painful. And as we read this Mishnah, I invite you to think about how much of this could we just delete because it seems repetitive or unnecessary. And as we think about that, we'll recognize what the Gemara is going to want to do with it. Elu en hagolin, these are the people who are exiled. Ha-horeg nefesh bishgaga, someone who kills somebody negligently, unintentionally. And now it's going to give three examples. Hayamagal bama'i gila, if somebody is tarring their roof. Now the roofs in those days, as Tosfot points out, were not like traditional European roofs that have kind of angular points to them. There were slants on them so that the rain would fall off, but they were relatively flat. And the way you would tar a roof, I'm sure if any of you have ever been involved in, you know, big school buildings or anything like that, you've got these flat roofs, you tar them, on the shul building even. So there is an angle, and the way you tar it, they had these big rollers, and you would push the roller and it would spread the tar. So now there's going to be a big difference about whether you're pushing that roller down the incline or you're pushing it up the incline. And it turns out if you're pushing it down the incline, you're going to end up going into exile. Hayamagal bami gila, if you're pushing it down the incline, v'nafla alav, and it fell off and hit somebody, v'hagto, and they died, or hayam shalshal b'chavit, or if you were lowering a barrel full of some produce or anything else, and it was coming down the rope and it fell and killed somebody, hayayored b'sulam, or if you're coming down a ladder, and you fell off the ladder, Hari Zegola, you're exiled, that is seen as a form of negligence. Meaning, you fell off a ladder and killed someone, you know, if I wanted to kill him, I'd find a better way to do that. That's not intentional, but it's seen as negligent enough that you are going to exile. Why do you need all three cases? Pushing a roller, lowering a barrel, you know, coming down a ladder. The bottom line, what seems to be the common thread of all these three cases? Something's going down. You're pushing down a roller, you're coming down a ladder, the barrel's going down. And Tosfot at the bottom points out that there is an incremental sense of expectation you're paying attention in these. If you're pushing a roller, do you care about the roller per se? It's just a tool. You're pushing it, so you may think, it's just a roller, you're pushing it, it falls. You might think, oh, that's negligent. If you're lowering a barrel, do you care about the barrel? It's got stuff in it you want. You're trying to get that down. So you think, I'm paying more attention to that. Maybe that wouldn't be seen as negligence. It would be seen as clearly you paying attention here. And of course, coming down a ladder yourself, you're more concerned with yourself or with a barrel or a roller. So the incremental amounts of expectation, you're going to care about the object. And nonetheless, this is all deemed as negligent, even though it's you coming down the ladder. Okay, so you go to Excel for that. Aval, however, im hayamoshech ba'amigilah, if you are pulling up the roller on the roof, meaning it's coming up the incline, v'naflav, and it fell, and it killed someone, hayadola b'chavito, you're pulling up the barrel, v'nifzak hachevel, and then the rope breaks, v'naflav, and it fell, and they died over the page, hayaola b'sulam, if you're climbing the ladder, v'naflav, aragto. And this is going to be the case that's complicated. If you're climbing up a ladder, is that an ascent, an upper direction, or a downward direction? That may sound odd if you're climbing. Well, this is how you climb, right? Is there any downward motion in here? I mean, every time I climb, my foot's going down, right? So this is going to be a complicated question. Is that an upward motion? Because you as a person are going up, but actually the only way you get up is by pushing down on a ladder. And if you fall, it's because something downward didn't work. So there's going to be discussion of whether that's up or down. But here the Mishnah seems to be saying, if you're going up a ladder straightforwardly and you just topple off the side. So it's not a question of whether you were pushing or not, you just fell off, but you're going up. Harizah inugala, you do not go to exile. Now, what are the possibilities for why you don't go to exile? Right, either it's seen as intentional, too intentional, or it's seen as not intentional enough. And on all of these cases, there's that ambiguity, and there are different sides. Say, oh, if you're climbing a ladder and you're going up, that's clearly too intentional because it's an unnatural thing to fall off the ladder when you're going up. So it's too intentional, and you can't go to exile. And by the way, that's a massive problem. If it's karov lemezid, I forgot to mention this. If it's ones, no punishment. Karov leones, no punishment. Shogeg, you go to exile. Mezid, you get the court punishment. If it's karov lemezid, you can't go to exile, and you don't get punished by the court. But what can happen?
The gol adam
can get you. So this is a very awkward situation, because you can't get punished in the court, so the court can't protect you, and you can't go to exile. So you now have to live knowing that any time the gol adam has legal permission to take justice into their own hands. It seems entirely untenable, which is why in a few daf we're going to talk about maybe there are court-appointed escorts that you get who can't like fight somebody off, but they stand there and they try to persuade a Gola Adam who comes anywhere near you that don't do it, it's a bad idea. But this would be a case. What happens in the United States if you testify and they're worried that you're going to get hurt? Witness protection program. So that exists in the United States too. There are risks to becoming part of a public profile case, and that might be what happens here. Okay, so after having said, you go to exile if you kill unintentionally, and giving three cases where that's an example, either you're pushing a roller, you're going down a ladder, you're lowering a basket, and then the opposite said, that's too unintentional. Zeh haklal, this is the general rule. Says the Mishnah, kol shebederech yiridato gola, anything that is a downward motion is considered negligence, and you go to exile. Shelo bederech yiridato enagola, anything that is an upward motion is seen as unintentional. So that's going to be the way the Rambam and other people read it. Meaning, if I'm pulling a barrel up and it's coming up to me and it falls and breaks, the assumption is that's more accidental than if I was lowering it and it fell. Because if I'm pulling it up and it fell, I should be careful that things don't happen to it. I should make sure the rope is strong, but it's lower down in my mental image of what could happen than if I'm lowering it. It's already going down. So the idea of it falling, I have to be on guard against that. And if I'm not more socially aware that, careful, it's going down, that's considered negligence. But if I'm pulling it up and it falls, no one can say, oh, you should have paid more attention so it didn't fall. I was pulling it up, not down. So downward is a problem. Upward is closer to accidental.
Same distinction that you made of putting your foot down as you're going up a ladder could be made in terms of the pulling the rope. Because
you're pulling it down.
In either sense, you're doing the same motion. Whether the if you're talking about a pulley kind of system, whether the chavit is going down or it's going up, you're doing the same thing.
Great. So I guess I have to limit it to say, what is the object doing? Is it going up or down? And with the barrel, it's going up or down. With the roller, it's going up or down. And the ladder, you're the object. So the question
so
of whether...
You're going up.
Well, your foot's going down. So is your foot...
So the tool that's taking you up the ladder is going down.
And this is where this image is going to come in shortly, which is there's an assumption about how people use axes that I've no idea if people actually do this. But there's going to be like four... There's one Mishnah that says, what happens if you're holding an axe and you go like that and the head falls off and it kills someone? And there are four Mishnahs. And one says... If it's in front of you, they're chayiv. Behind you, it's potter. One says if it's behind you, it's chayiv. In front of you, it's potter. One says it's potter, whether it's in front or behind. One says it's chayiv in front. Every possible permutation. And the Gemara is going to say, oh, and they're all true. And we'll tell you why. And they're going to talk about which is up and down, and we'll get into that. So you're right. We're going to have to pay a lot of attention to where objects are going. And I'll tell my daughter about this later when we're talking about which direction the wipes were going and how much attention she should have paid. So... the Gemara begins by saying, hold on a minute, this seems like the weirdest rule in the world. You're talking about intention, you're starting with if it's going up or down. Is that a classic way to define intention? So the Gemara begins, Mana Hanemili, where does this come from? Amar Shmuel d'Amar Kra, it says in the verse, one of the verses we skimmed through, V'yapel Allah V'yamot, in the description of what negligence looks like, it said if you throw a stone, if you hold an object, and then it falls, V'yapel Allah, and it falls on them, and they die, Ad Shipol Derech Nefila, it has to be a downward motion. Which again makes you think. So if I, throw something up in the air and it lands on someone on a balcony and it knocks them out, maybe that's not negligence. Which again, you would think, how is that not the case? And we're going to talk about what if I throw something and it's part of the upward arc or part of the downward arc, or if it never was going to have an arc, or if it's completely horizontal. So this is all about how much attention do I need to be paying? And to some degree, this may sound like homiletics or a stretch. This is about those in power as well, paying attention to those who have less power. And the idea that you have to pay attention to what's beneath you is going to be key to why the Kohen Gadol is at the core of all of this, and why he might get sent to exile without any end to his sentence, not just as a kind of gap in the system, but because this is all about, to live in society, the people in power need to be attentive to those who have less. You need to be aware that there are people beyond you, and this is trying to push out any narcissism into a sense of awareness. So paying attention to what's beneath you is going to be part of the forefront of what we want to achieve. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, and now we're going to spend a few lines trying to examine what exactly is considered unintentional. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Bishgaga, it said in the verse, Bishgaga prat lemezid, and that excludes if you did it bemezid on purpose. And in a second, the Gemara is going to say, well, obviously, if you did it on purpose, you get punished. Bivli dad, it also says if you do it bivli dad, without intention. So prat lemezid kavan, so that excludes if you did it intentionally. So now we're starting to build up a vocabulary of unintentional, intentional, on purpose, accident. And the Gemara is going to try to weave through what are these talking about. Mezid, the Gemara says, Pshita bar katalu. Obviously, if you did it bemezid, you're excluded. You're a murderer. Amar Rava. Rava says, oh, ema prat leomer muta. When it says bishgaga, it's not saying if you did it intentionally, obviously, you're excluded. But if you did it fully knowing what you were doing, meaning I took a knife and I put it, plunged it into someone's chest, knowing they were going to die. And then the court says, what are you doing? And you say, oh, I didn't know murder was illegal. So I claim complete ignorance of the law. So what I did was intentional, but it wasn't a criminal intent because I didn't know it was prohibited. What is the case in American law, by the way? Can you claim ignorance of the law? Can I kill someone and say I had no idea? By the way, in traffic law, I find that very irritating because there are a number of differences between British law and American law. And depending on where you are in New York, can you turn right on red, not right on, I don't know. And people are hooting at me and I don't know if I can or I can't. And you should be able to claim. Say again. Oh, I see. Well, you should be able to. Oh, you're lucky we had a visitor at the back who just stepped out. But don't worry, you missed him. I would imagine that I would want to come to court and be able to say, look, traffic laws are complicated. You can't expect me to read the code of every city that I'm in. And I should be able to get off, not get paying a ticket. But I don't know if that works. And when they, by the way, on 193rd, by the park, driving along there, big stretch of road, 35 miles an hour, doesn't seem unreasonable. There's a new camera up there. And they put it in without telling anybody. So one week I just came home to like 15 tickets through the door. And I wanted to say, just make me pay one, because now I know. That didn't work either. What if I say I had no idea? So this is all about state of mind. How do you prove criminal intent? It'll be a question. But if they say I had no idea, and we can legitimately prove they had no idea it was illegal, so is that accidental? You did an action you were intending to do. Is it negligent? So everybody seems to agree it's not negligent. It's either accidental-ish or intentional-ish. And what Rava's going to say is, Ema prela oma mutar, if you killed somebody and said, oma mutar, I thought it was permitted, you don't go to exile, because it's not negligent. Amalei Abayabai says, oma mutar, honestly, what are you talking about? If you didn't know, it's a complete accident. And this is going to be part of our debate about what does it mean to live in society? Do I have an obligation to know the law? Can I say, look, I'm a libertarian, government should leave me alone, I know what I know. If I know the law, fine, catch me on that. But otherwise, it's not my business to look into law. And Abayah seems to be taking that view. If I say, I had no idea that I wasn't allowed to kill, that's an accident. It was not criminal intent. Amalei Sha'ani, and Rava responds and says, no, Ani Omer, I say, Omer Mutakarav Lemezitu. If you live in society and you claim ignorance of the law, that's close to intentional. You have an obligation when you live to no condo living. You can't put a mat outside your door and say, I didn't know. You got to we gave you a whole booklet of the condo rules. It's 300 pages long with a lot of footnotes, but you've got an obligation. If you're going to live here, you've got to read the rules. Bivli Dart, so now the Gemara picks up and says, hold on a minute. You also said Bivli Dart excludes if you did it intentionally. Pratla Mitkaven. Mitkaven? Pshita Barakatal, obviously intentional. You're a murderer if it's intentional. And this is going to be a complicated morally complicated line. Amar Rabba. Rabba says, oh, what does Pratla Mitkaven mean? It doesn't just mean intentional. It means you did something intentional as an act, but you didn't end up the way you planned. Pratla Mitkaven Laharig the Behema. You went hunting. I think this happened to Dick Cheney at one point. Am I wrong that he went shooting with a friend and ended up shooting the friend? Pratla Mitkaven Laharig the Behema. If you wanted to kill an animal, Laharig the Adam, but accidentally you killed a person. And the question here, all the Rishonim start debating, what does this mean? Did this mean you aimed at something and you shot it and it turned out it was a person but you thought it was an animal? Or that you were shooting an animal and it kind of blew next to it and it hit the person? But that's when we say, you intended that, but that's not exile and it's not mazit. Because you didn't like intend to kill them, you intended to kill something. But it's also, you know, if you're going to shoot something, you better be pretty sure that it's not your friend or not a human being. So that's actually too intentional, and that would mean the family could come after you. Court's not going to execute you. You can't go to exile. And you're going to live in kind of fear the whole of your life now that they're going to come after you unless you issue a public apology. But it's now on you to prove that you can live in society and you have remorse and basically run. So it excludes a case where you try to kill an animal, but you end up killing a person. Or lekuti v'hareget Yisrael, or you tried to kill a kuti. What's a kuti? Anyone know what a kuthite is?
Question of conversion.
Right. Historically, there were a group of kuthites who were imported into Israel by one of the hegemonies, the ancient empires, that wanted to kind of mix up populations. So they brought in kuthites, and they technically took on some practices that the Israelites had, but they were seen as a foreign intrusion, not fully converted, not fully immigrated. And it seems that killing them was not the same legally as killing a member of the Israelite population. Now, that may sound, people might say, see, Jews think killing other people is fine. There was a debate about 10 years ago, probably now, about drone strikes and whether there was a difference between, there was somebody who went to fight for ISIS who happened to be an American citizen, and that created a very big problem. The United States government, why would that create a problem?
Targeting
your
own citizens.
And why would that be more of a problem than targeting somebody else?
You have more rights as a citizen.
Right. If you're an American citizen, I have legal rights that foreign people don't have. Which, again, you could say, oh, that's racist. But it's not racist. That's how nations work. If I go to France, God forbid, and I kill someone, can America put me in jail for it? No, they have no jurisdiction there. And that's why people sometimes flee to another country. And if you've got an extradition treaty, they might send you back. But you have jurisdiction when you're legal institutions. And the claim here is, Kutim, they were not under Jewish jurisdiction. So if you were to kill them, that is not permitted. It's not permitted for some just to kill animals, dumb. But it's not permitted to kill people for sure. But there's no recourse in Jewish law. So if you do it, we can't hold you liable and we can't execute you. We don't have jurisdiction. But if you try to kill a kuti and you end up killing a Jew, you could say, oh, I know what I was doing was wrong, but it was something that you can't punish me for, and I accidentally killed somebody who is in your jurisdiction. Is that negligent or not? And here it's saying it's too close to intentional. And also, Prat Lenefel Vaharekabet Kaima, and this is, again, a horrific situation you're imagining. If you were to kill a Nefel, which is a child who is not going to survive, a child who's born in a way where doctors say this child is, I can't remember the term, is non-viable, is that the term that medical usage? Meaning this child has got very limited time, and in Jewish law, that child is not considered to be legally alive in a way that you would be culpable in court for harm. Vahari bet kaima, and then you killed a viable child. And again, you may think, who's going around killing Nafon? This is a horrific circumstance. But you could imagine a kind of euthanasia situation where parents may say, you know, this is a horrific, the child, we know medically, we can do tests on the MRI and everything else. This kid's in immense pain right now, and it's not going to make it another week. And you can make the child live for another 7 days in pain, or you can end the pain now. Legally, there are no repercussions Jewishly, and you're going to save the child pain, and you'll get closure and all sorts of things. Again, this is not, you know, for those who may someday listen to this recording, this is not suck. But there is a legal case where this arises. And what happens if you go to the maternity ward and you say, this is the baby we made the decision about, and it turns out, oops, that was the wrong baby. And I think these accidents do happen, you know, where they do operations on the wrong people by mistake. All sorts of things like that happen. So is that shogeg or not? And this is a question about intention. If you're a doctor, how much attention do you have to pay to who your patient is? And you'd think the threshold on that is quite high. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. If you accidentally said, oh, I was trying to do it to them and I did it to them, that's basically intentional. We're saying you're not liable. You didn't intend to do it to that person. But that was not negligence. That was gross negligence is what the claim would be here. Full stop. Tanu Rabban, the rabbi said, now we're going to look through another one of the psukim and identify what's being excluded by these seemingly arbitrary phrases, accidental, without malice, not in hiding. What do these all mean? So Tanu Rabban and the rabbi thought, imbefeta, if you did it suddenly, prat lekeren zavit. So this excludes if you walk around a corner. Now this is a case which, again, not recommended. And I remember in, I think in elementary school, they taught us, how do you carry scissors? Anybody know how you carry scissors?
Down.
You carry them down. So this is why, because if you're walking along and there's a corner and then someone comes along and, oops, I met you on the corner, I didn't intend to kill them. Is that shogeg or is that not shogeg? So it says, it excludes that case. Now, why would that case not be negligence? Is it gross negligence or is it accidental? If I'm holding scissors and I walk around a corner. Anyone think it's accidental? Okay, so some people do. But that debate's now open. It seems to be people think, carry them down. Don't walk around corners with knives. But that it's not clear. Below Ava, and it has to be without hate, pratlasona, meaning this excludes if somebody hated them. So if somebody ends up killing somebody and they say, I didn't mean it, I didn't intend to, but we know that you hated them, it's not mazed, but we say, you know, this was probably intended at some point. And we'd want to invoke Freud at some point in this discussion about how intentional, what subconscious, what did you mean, and the fact that you hate them, we imagine you were less negligent, less attentive than you should have been on purpose. It continues, hadafu, if you push them, shidafu begufo. And it has to be a case that would be included. If you push them with your body, that would also be negligent, and you would go to exile for that. Oh, hishlach alavo, if you threw it. Now, this includes, lahavi yurida shehit sarach aliyah. This includes, if it fell on them, a case where it comes down for the sake of going up. Now, this is where you might think going down for the sake of going up is kind of an upward motion. Now, when might you do a downward action for the sake of going up? So this is the classic example it's going to use. If you're holding an axe, how do you get a big swing on the axe to hit down? You ever been to those theme parks where you get a prize for hitting the thing? You lift it back and then you go boom. So that backward action is down, but it's just in service to you going up. So you might say, oh, that's one big upward swing. So Gemara says, no, if it's going down at any point, That's a downward action. Even Letzorach Aliyah, even if it's going up. People always use this talk about going to Israel, Yerida, Letzorach Aliyah. It's not obviously not what it's talking about. Somewhere if it goes down for the sake of going up, you're still liable, is what it's saying. That's shogeg. So you have to think, even though it's an upward action, and I don't need to think about what's up in the sky, if it's going down at any point, you need to be conscious of that and aware. Okay, below Tziyah, if you did it without precision, let's say, or without ambushing, this excludes if you try to throw something that way and accidentally went that way. I'm sure we know people who have throws like that, who you wouldn't put on the baseball team. You throw and it kind of goes in the wrong way. We say that's not shogeg, that's kind of accidental. That's karov la'ones, you didn't intend that at all. And it repeats without ambush or without intent. This also excludes if you tried to throw it 2 feet and it went 4 feet. So here we've got distance of intent, directional intent, upward or downward intent, emotional intent, all being discussed as to whether they exclude you or not. And again, the Gemara functions we've seen, it is not a law code. This is not like clear that you can leave this now and think, oh, I know what intentional and unintentional is. It's discussing themes and ideas that leaves the discretion of a judge, which is what drove Maimonides insane. And said, that's not how a legal system should work. I need a code, which is why he wrote the Mishnah Torah, saying, this is the law, this is the law, this is the law. And a whole bunch of commentators said, you can't do that without quoting the dissenting views. And that's why the Ravid interrupts, and that's why the Ramban interrupts. And others say, you need to put the dissent back in. And Rambam would have been like, what are you doing? I'm trying to straighten out our legal tradition and you're messing it up again. But the Gemara seems to identify this as the appropriate way to discuss law. What if you meet your friend in the forest? Which again, sounds like the beginning of a fairy tale. So the Gemara wonders, why does it invoke a case of being in the forest as the classic case of when you end up fleeing? And this is going to be key. Maya arashut l'nizak l'mazik l'kanet l'sham. Just as a forest is a neutral territory where both the victim and the perpetrator had permission to be there. The forest isn't, anyone can be there. Just as that's the case there. It has to be a case where you both have permission to be there. So this is now going to mean if I'm in my own backyard and I'm, you know, being incredibly negligent, meaning I'm in my backyard and I'm throwing things like crazy at the wall, I'm really angry or I'm doing target practice, and then somebody hops into my garden and gets in the way, that's always going to be closer to onus. Meaning it's my place. You don't have a right to be here. What happens if it was my brother or my son or my guest? Then they got a right to be there. I invited them in. But if somebody comes into my property without my intent, without my knowledge or invitation, that's considered accidental. Bar Mineh, and the rest of the yellow is going to be dealing with this one question that we've already mentioned. Bar Mineh, Rabbi Bar and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Bar asked Rabbi Yochanan, Hayyola Basulam, if you were climbing up the ladder, in a very specific case, not that you fell off. What fell off the ladder? Nishmat hashaliva mitachtav. The rung fell out. So the rung's falling down. You were going up. Your leg was going down. Did the rung move down before it fell off? So we'll find out. Is it possible the rung might have moved down before it fell off? Is there a case in which that might happen? Right. Meaning if you had a very close look at it, would it bend a little bit? If it's a metal ladder, maybe not. If it's wood, maybe. If it's a rotten rung, even more likely. And those will be discussed. So one of the rung falls out, and it killed somebody, mahu. Ki hai gavna aliyahi o yuridahi. Is it up or down? And now we're going to have, if I put on mine, I didn't put on yours, I apologize, like a parenthesis right in front of where it says amale, until the second last skinny line, which says shela achorav, where Rabbi Yochanan is going to interrupt this thought and say that's not to do with our case. That case is obvious. If a rung falls out, he says, that's a yurida, shetzorach aliyah. That's your foot's going down, so you can go up. Straightforward case. And what did we say? Yurida shetzorach aliyah. Is that considered negligence? Is that considered you go to galus?
No.
Very close?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Meaning we said all downward action is a problem. And we said, oh, what about down the... for the sake of going up, and we said we have a verse that includes that. The Hashlich says even if it was for the intention of going up, all downward action is included. So Rabbi Yochanan says, what are you talking about? Kfar nagat b'yirudah shivtachle. We already spoke about that case of when it goes down for the sake of going up, and obviously you go to galus. So Rabbi Yabou responded and said, Eitfei, well, hold on a minute. Our Mishnah seems to disagree. Why does our Mishnah disagree? Because it adds, at the end of giving example, it says, Zeha klal. It says, this is a general rule. If you did it in a downward way, you go to Golas, and not in a downward way, you don't. Why does it add that general rule once it's already given the cases? When it says not in a downward way, what is it including? It's including our case when it goes down, but it's not in a downward way because you're trying to go up. It's all for the sake of going up. That's what Rabbi Yabou tries to claim. And Rabbi Yochanan responds, according to your reasoning, your methodology, why does it say the first part to that general rule? Why does it include a downward way? It must be talking about our picture cases, which is the case of a, what's somebody with an axe called? An axeman? X-men? I don't know. There must be a better name than that. Somebody with an axe. That's the case. A cutter. That's what we're talking about. What is that? Say again? What do you call it? A chopper? This comes up in fairy tales all the time. Woodsman. There you go. I knew it. A lumberjack, that a psychopath, yeah, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre comes to mind. There are all these questions that come up around this. Axeman, woodsman, I think in the Robin Hood, it's called a woodsman when he comes in to save the grandmother, which is also a vicious fairy tale where he ends up cutting things open and all sorts of things. So, that's what it's talking about. Letuye Katsav, first word in the line is Nami. Hacha Nami, here too, Letuye Katsav. We're trying to, that whole general rule, so right at the top, keep your finger there, the first one on the line is Nami. At the top of the page, that pink in the Mishnah, Zeha Klal, this is the general rule. Anything should be Dechi Yudato Gol, anything downward you go to Golas, anything upward you don't. Rabbi Yochanan says that whole general rule is being added to include a case of a woodsman, which is seemingly straightforward, but is complex, because this is what he has to say. The Tanya we taught on a bride, Katsav Shayim Katsav, you had a woodsman who was chopping. Tanachada, I should have put that in dark yellow too, sorry. One person teaches, Lefanav Chayev, if the axe head flew off in front of them, Yochayev Galus, meaning that's called negligence, because it's a downward motion. La'achra Pator, behind you, you're considered to be absolved, meaning it's accidental. V'tani Idach, but there's another teacher who says, La'achra Chayev, behind you, Yochayev, Lefanav Pator, in front of you, you're exempt. Tanya Idach ben Lefanav ben La'achra Chayev. Somebody else says in front or behind your Chayev. Another says behind or in front your Pater. V'lo Kashin, Rabbi Yochanan says, and there's no problem. They don't conflict. They're all mutually true. Why? So this is where this is going to be straightforward, hopefully. On the sheet, I hope you all have access to this. There are essentially five motions when you are chopping wood with an axe. And it begins, funnily enough, apparently, with a downward motion. So you've picked up this axe. To really get a good chop, the first thing you want to do is, what's the first thing you want to do, would you think? Yeah, well, I would think it would be like that, but apparently the first thing you want to do is, okay, I want to get a big swing. So I go down. Anyone have you heard of shot put? Anyone know what shot put is? Sure. Yeah, and if you, it's an Olympic sport, a big ball you hold here. It was the one sport I did in high school because you don't have to move very much. So you hold it there, and to get going, in theory, you just throw it, but there's all these techniques to build up as much energy and momentum in that throw. So you go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and if you watch them, it's amazing. They spin and they spin and they spin and they go, and then you fling it out, and they do as much as they can to get as much energy in that. So presumably, if you're trying to hit with an axe, the first thing you do is down, up, down, up, down. So those are the five. You go down, up. I mean, it's a smooth action, but the action, the direction shifts. So this is the image. The first thing you do is you go down. Second is you go up. Third is you're going down around the back, then up at the back, and then down at the front. So now all those five, how many of them are up? You got two is up and four is up. The other three are down. So the Gemara is going to say, and half of them are behind you and half of them in front of you. That's what the different Mishnayot are talking about. Lo kasha. First one line is lefanav. Kambi yuridish lefanav ali esha acharav. Here when it says, your chayev in front for galus and pader behind. That's when you're going down in front or up behind. Kambi lishana for yudu achrav. The other case, which is the inverse, is when you're going down behind and up in front. Kambi yudu shvana v'shal achron. One's talking about the downward actions in front, both behind. Kambi lishana v'shal achron. One's talking about the upward action both in front and behind. Full stop. in Rabbi Yochanan's intercession about axes. And now we come back to that pressing question that Rabbi Bar raised about what happens if a rung falls out of a ladder? Is that up or down? Now Rabbi Yochanan was of the view, that's straightforward. You step on a rung and it falls out, you're going down for the sake of going up. So it's a downward action. That's what he says. But the Gemara says, we're not fully on board with Rabbi Yochanan here. Maybe it's more complicated. Lema katanai. Maybe it's a Mishnaic debate in a different Mishnah. If you climb up a ladder and the rung falls out from beneath you, there are two views. One says you are liable, and the other says you're exempt from galus. Meaning one says it's accidental, so you're not liable if it falls out beneath you. And the other seems to say you're chayev because it is enough intention to be considered negligent. My love, Bakamiflege. Is that not what they're debating? Demasava Yurida, Humasava Elihu. Maybe somebody thinks it's a downward action and someone thinks it's an upward action, and that's a debate. And then the Gemara is going to say no. Lo. Maybe the Kule Alma Elihu. Maybe everybody agrees climbing a ladder is upwards and it doesn't matter that your foot is going down and the rung falls down. You're going up. And therefore, you are not liable as negligence. Presumably, that's possible for Lokasha, end of the line Lokasha, and there's no problem. So why does one say Chayev and one say Pater? First word is Kan. Kan le Nezikin, Kan le Galus. The person who says Chayev, meaning you have damages, you still are responsible for action. If you break something negligently, even if it's not what we call Shogeg, if you did it without intention, you still Chayev damages. It's still cause of you that it broke. If I have an accident in the car, I can't just say, oh no, it was an accident, enjoy. I got to pay for the damage that I did. In fact, in Jewish law, you have to pay for the damage you do even if it happens while you're sleeping. If you're lying in bed and there's something next to you and you fall asleep, and in your sleep you smash it, you're chayv for any damages that would happen. You're not chayv if somebody put it there after you fell asleep, but there's still some awareness, so you're liable for damages, kind of galus, but you're not going to galus for shogig in that sense. So then maybe that's why one says chayv, one says pater, about the same case of climbing and the rung falls out. Ibai ema, another view might be, hava hala galus, they're both talking, excuse me, about galus. One says chayv, one says pater, lo kasha, but they're still both true, hada at liya, hada lo at liya, because one's talking about a rotten rung, and the other's talking about a non-wormy rung. Talia being, or in this context, meaning wormy. So if you've got a wormy rung, why might that be different to a standard, strong, firm rung? How would that be any different, technically speaking?
Anticipated breaking.
Okay, interesting. Maybe you should have paid more attention to it. There's also an assumption that when you stand on it, the dynamics are different, in that the rung goes down. So there's like a downward action that are rather than you being stationary. But you're right, it's also the case that you should have been more sensitive to it, and that that's maybe why you would be chayv galus in that context, but it has to be considered a downward action. If you were kind of doing something upward with a wormy rung, you wouldn't, like you were pushing and then it fell out and landed on someone, that would still be up. But if you're going down and it's wormy, it kind of depresses a little bit while you're standing, but it is about anticipating attention to what goes down, and a wormy rung, you have to pay more attention. If you bite aimer, and some say, have a hard lot, no, we're talking about a very sturdy ladder, and still there's one view that says you're chayv and one view that says you're potter, and they're both true because lo kasha had midhak, had lo midhak. One is talking about when it's fixed firmly into its position on the ladder, and the other where it's a little loose. So even if it's not wormy, but it's loose, it's going to jiggle a little bit when you stand on it, which means there'll be downward action, and you'll be in trouble. Full stop. I guess I'll read the two lines of the Mishnah, and then we'll end. So the Mishnah is now going to talk about how far do we worry about unintended consequences. So far, we're just talking about straightforward, direct consequences of what you do. I threw it, and it went further than I thought. Or I threw it, and it went in a direction I didn't anticipate, but it's all directly tied to me. What happens, the case that I mentioned before, if I throw something, and as a result of that, something else is triggered, and there's a whole series of unintended consequences. Nishmat abarz mikitu v'harag, if I was throwing, chopping with my axe, and the top of the axe fell off. So that's already a little detached, because I didn't throw it. It kind of detached from the thing that I was holding. Rebbe Yomei Enagola, Rebbe says, you don't go to Galus. That's because it's too intentional. Meaning, if you're about to swing with an axe, the first thing you ought to do is make sure that the head isn't loose. And if you haven't checked that, you go to Galus. Chamim Arimim Galus Chamim say, no, that's still unintentional. It can always come loose without your knowledge. And you go to Galus, it's negligent. Mina Eitz Hamit Bakav. One was if I'm chopping, and this was the case I had with Miriam last night. I blew the candle and something blew out. So if I'm chopping with an axe and a piece of wood flies off and hits somebody and kills them, is that intentional or not? Rebbe Omer Gola, Rebbe says that is a case of negligence. You have to be, and this is extreme. Rebbe is saying to live in society, you have to recognize that there are always unintended consequences. And if you're going to chop wood, you need to make sure no one's around you. And sometimes you may think, you know, on television shows, they always say for health and safety rules, we need to say, don't try this at home. And sometimes you'll find like on hot cups, it will say caution hot. You might think, well, obviously. I think there was some microwave company a few years ago that had on the box of the microwave, do not put cats in the microwave. And I think, why have you put that? And there's one reason why it's up there, because somebody did it and tried to sue them and said, you didn't tell me not to, which is obviously extreme. But do you have to prepare for eventual consequences of every sort? And that would be, is it the company's liability to anticipate that people might do crazy things or not? So here, do I have to anticipate wood might fly off? And Rebbe says, yes, that's shogeg. If that happened, you have to run away. You didn't have sufficient social awareness. Chachamim Ramim Einagol Chachamim say, no, that is too far removed. And then we're going to, next week we'll pick up with the Gemara that talks about what happens if I threw something and it hit something and that landed on something else and that hit something else and then it killed someone. Would Rebbe say that's too far, or does he go unintended consequences forever? So we'll leave it there and we'll carry on next week. Thank you all. Okay, good day one and all.